This is the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game.
Rule number one is you have to believe in yourself. You're the only one who doesn't think you belong in this appointment. The prospect has already validated your existence by scheduling time with you. Get it through your head you belong here, go in there, crush it, and close the deal.
A place where sales professionals can come to learn from other sales professionals and thought leaders that have mastered their craft.
The difference between a good salesperson and a best-in-class salesperson is only 2 minutes. By spending an extra 2 minutes on what you might think is a mundane task in the sales game, you separate yourselves from the pack, you grow your book of business, you close more deals, and you retain your accounts.
As well as their peers who are still striving for perfection to achieve their why.
I have a wife and 4 kids. Failure is not an option.
Real sales professionals. Real stories. Real results.
It's no different than being a professional baseball player. You can't be a one-trick pony. You have to be a 5-tool player in order to succeed in this game.
This is the Power Producers Podcast, production redefined. Are you ready to feel the power?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game. Today, we have Mr. Peter Voss from IGO. A-I-G-O, and if you look at the first 2 letters, you'll know what we're going to talk about, AI. And my goodness, I don't even know where you start half the time with AI these days, because it's everywhere you look. But before we get into that and hit that racetrack, Peter, why don't you just give everybody sort of a quick bio as to who you are and what you're doing now, and then we'll jump into the questions.
Yes, sure. So I actually started out as an electronics engineer, started my own electronics company, fell in love with software, and my company turned into a software company. And so I developed an ERP software package for medium-sized businesses, accounting and everything to do with running a business. That company was quite successful, went from the garage to 400 people and did an IPO. So that was awesome. It's when I exited that company, it really occurred to me, what big project do I want to tackle? And what occurred to me is that software is really quite dumb. I was proud of the software that we'd written, but, software doesn't have common sense. It doesn't learn. It really doesn't have intelligence. So really, I embarked on this journey of figuring out how can we make software intelligent. And so I spent 5 years just studying all different aspects of intelligence and what had been done in the field of AI. And then I started my own AI company and developed a very intelligent conversational AI that we deploy in the call center to really replace agents. It's not so much to assist agents, but it's really to replace them. That's how good it is. And in fact, you can get better service with the right type of automation, because you don't have to wait for anybody. You get instantaneous response. And you don't have the problem of, agents that aren't trained very well and so on. So it is possible to do this kind of automation. So my company currently has 2 different areas. The one is our commercial area, call center automation, and really generally conversational AI. So it could also be used as an assistant for a salesperson and things of that nature. And the other part of our company is to continually improve the intelligence to get closer and closer to human level intelligence. So that's what my company, IGO.ai, does.
So we're in the insurance industry. We are one of the last industries to adopt new technology and push forward. I know that sounds, and it blows my mind. I don't know how in the world we aren't more on the curve of what's happening out there, but it never ceases to amaze me that we just don't change very quickly. And I can see a huge use case for what you're doing and the problem that you're solving, specifically with some of the call centers that we have to deal with. I mean, I can tell you, I hate picking up the phone unless I absolutely have to. I'm one of the people that most of the time I'm going to try and solve my issues by going to Google first or YouTube. Then I'm going to go to a chat bot. And if I still can't find the answer, I may pick up the phone. But even with my banking, when I call and get a live person, there's no consistency to the experience you're going to get. Right. And I think that's a big issue, because if I need to call my credit union to wire money to someone for my business or personally, I need whoever's on the other end of that call to understand how that process works. 2 weeks ago, I needed to wire some money, and I had to talk to three people before I found someone who knew how that needed to happen. The first person told me that I wasn't able to wire money unless I was calling from the phone that they had on record as my phone number. And I said, that's not true. I call you from my office line every other week when I send a wire, because I can be hands-free when I do it. But all you need is my cell phone. No, that's not how it works. And I said, ma'am, the reason you need my cell phone number isn't to verify who I am because I'm talking to you on it. It's because you need to send me a text with a token that I can then tell you what it is over this line that I'm calling you from. And she wasn't having it, man. She didn't have any idea what she was talking about. So I went to the next person. And the next person, it was something different. Finally, I got to the third person, but this was 30 minutes of my time that I spent to get an answer. And I can't imagine what it's like for our clients as insurance agents if we're not handling this, even if we are handling the service in-house. However, there's a movement of pushing small commercial and personal lines into service centers and giving up a point or two of commission, but removing that service burden from your agency. Well, that sounds good in theory, but what happens to the retention in your book when you call and you can't get a human on the phone, or you can't get the phone answered, or you get passed around, or you're getting not accurate information across the board? And I think AI solves a ton of that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as you say, it's very sad. And call centers are struggling as well to find people to work. I read a statistic that the average longevity of a call center agent is 6 weeks. Of course, that would be slanted because a lot of people just give up after 48 hours. You know, that I don't, this is not something I can deal with, people screaming at me all day long, you know. But, you know, the experience you mentioned is unfortunately very typical, because it's very hard to get good agents and to train them and to retain them. And then, as you say, if things get farmed out to other companies, they, you know, once removed from the actual customer loyalty and experience. So automation can very definitely help. But as you say, insurance industry is one of the last to embrace automation. And I guess it's just because it's so highly regulated, and it's kind of the mindset of it. I don't know. It's very sad, because the right kind of automation can certainly help. And I'll give you an example there. You know, one of our big clients is the 1-800-Flowers group of companies that includes Harry and David and Popcorn Factory and 10 other companies. And the owners of the company, even though it's a listed company, started the company, and they had one store selling flowers, and they knew most of their customers. They knew who they buy flowers for, you know, and for what occasions and what kind of flowers they wanted and so on. And they approached us to say, we'd like to have that same or similar experience, as close as we can get to it, with automation, with AI, to service our 20 million customers on this hyper-personalized basis. And that is basically the technology we implemented at the 1-800-Flowers group of companies, where over time, the system gets to know you, gets to know who you buy gifts for, you know, and across any of the companies in the group, what you buy, who the person is, what your relationship is, you know, buying chocolate for my niece for her birthday. And the system remembers that. And then next time you call, it can use that information. So it's like having this hyper-personalized concierge service for the individual. Now, imagine having that in the insurance business, where you're trying to trace a claim. It's always, you know, ongoing things. You have to call back and see what's happening. They need more information, and it's back and forth. If you can actually call into a system and it can remember, know immediately what you're talking about, and follow up and say, oh yes, we've now resolved this issue, but we do need this information from you, without you having to explain your whole story, which you probably had to do at the bank three times starting from scratch, you know? So that's possible with the right kind of technology. But you have to have the right technology to be able to do that.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of stuff around the voice right now, specifically to, I mean, and I'm sure this technology's been in other industries for a while longer at this point, but we've got some companies that are using the voice recognition and transcription to change the service model of agencies and increase revenues because it's analyzing conversations and finding places where cross-sell opportunities were missed over the phone. So I could have an agent at a desk that's on the phone and the guy talks about calls in to add a new pickup truck to his policy. And that person just goes on and they get the information and they get the quote, right. they bind the quote and they wrap it up and call it a day. And the agency principal may think that that was a win. And it is. Anytime you write new business, it's a win. However, AI could analyze that conversation and say, pickup truck purchased. And if it knows any time that a pickup truck is purchased, we should ask, does the pickup truck have a hitch?
Right.
And if it does, what are you towing with it? You mm-hmm. you might find out that that person's got a couple of jet skis or campers or whatever mm-hmm. else. Or it could be that, oh, wow, you just moved to a much heavier vehicle. I'm looking at your liability limits. Your regular liability limits on your auto look good, but have you ever contemplating getting an umbrella to raise those limits now that the liability you have is increased because your heavier vehicle does more damage or whatever else? And agents that get those reports and actually review and use them are finding right. an uptick in sales opportunities.
Right. Absolutely. But it's difficult to train your agents to consistently go through all of these things where, as if you use AI, you can have all of those business rules of under what circumstances, you know, do you upsell, what kind of extra policy or ask additional follow-up questions. You can do that very, very consistently with an automated system much better than, you can with humans.
Absolutely. I mean, and I feel like there's other things we can do too, you know, from an AI standpoint. I mean, we're at a point right now where I use video a lot for our marketing in our agency, but not all of my people necessarily are great on camera, not because they're ugly, but because they just get weird when they turn mm-hmm. the camera on and they can't right. do any, you know, remember what they were saying. And so we decided we were going to buy software that allowed us to upload the transcription of what their blog post was mm-hmm. or wanted to say, but is now matching it to a custom built avatar of that mm-hmm. same team member. So they're giving you their content and their voice, but we never had to record anything. And I can't even imagine how slick that's going to be, because there's a bunch of things I can do along those lines with educational, you know, putting a knowledge base on my website with a journey for everything you need to know about each of the lines of coverage that a homeowner can come in or a business owner can come in, self-select what they want to learn about. But basically, I'm creating this content directly from, you know, other blog posts that I've written, or I mean, honestly, in some cases could use ChatGPT to create the video scripts based on blog articles that I upload that I wrote 4 years ago that are evergreen and still relevant today. And it's not going to take me any time. It's just going to take me the time to get one of my team members trained on how to actually use that, put the process in place. And the next thing you know, we've got a content creation machine like no other.
Yes, the advent of ChatGPT has really changed the game, where, as you say, you can write copy and you can use it for searching through a database and, you know, frequently asked questions. And then as you mentioned, you can create videos automatically. That's all the same kind of technology. It's called large language models or generative AI. But there's a huge, huge question mark over that, or exclamation mark, I should say, a note of caution. I don't know if you came across the article where a Chevrolet dealer used ChatGPT as a chatbot on his website. And somebody came in and said, "Will you sell me this car for $1? And the chat said, "Yes." And the person followed up and say, "Are you sure this is a legally binding commitment?" And the chatbot said, "Yes." Now, that's a disaster. And so the big cautionary note is these generative systems, these large language models, these statistical systems, you cannot rely on them. There always has to be a human in the loop. So if it's writing copy for you, there may be a real big blooper in there and you have to, you know, read through it. So it's fantastic as a tool to, you know, really expedite things tremendously, but you always need to have a human in the loop to verify it. So, you know, if you have a process, for example, where you're going to be signing up a new policy or changing a policy or things of that nature, that's not the right tool because you cannot rely on it. You need something, what we call cognitive AI, where it really can think and reason about that, and you can have robust rules that it follows, that, you know, the system is fully auditable. So your legal system can sign off it, your marketing people can sign off it, your customer experience people can sign off it. You're not going to get those nasty surprises. So I think it's just something really for people to be aware of, that the generative AI is very, very powerful, but it's never never totally reliable, and it can cause huge harm if you just let it loose on people without, as I say, a human in the loop.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, the use case that we have, I mean, I caution people not to use it to create organic content anyhow, because you're going to, if Google hasn't figured it out, they will, and they'll ding you at some point, you know, on your ranking with them. But I use it more for ideas, man, to be honest with you.
Fantastic.
I use it to give me an outline. I'll give you an example. Earlier today, we got a note from one of our insurance companies that they're having a hard time with plumbers right now because plumbers have gotten careless and they've gotten too many. There's been too many claims that have happened due to water damage. And so they're really tightening up, and they want to make sure that everybody out there has a quality control program in place for plumbers. I don't own a plumbing company and I'm not a quality control guy, but what I can do is I can go to ChatGPT and tell it that it's a plumber who, or risk manager for a plumbing company who's having problems with insurance claims currently, and you've been challenged to put a quality control program in place. Please provide an outline of the steps necessary to do that. And boom, it's going to give you, you know, 8 to 10 things. And then you can review that. Does that make sense? Does that look like what it should look like? Yes. From there, you know, now you've got to have a little bit more human interaction. But the other thing that we've done is we've created email drip campaigns from these outlines where we can send an email to our client once a week for 12 weeks with a homework attachment that's been created by ChatGPT, so that if they do everything they should do at the end of 12 weeks, they've got a full-blown quality control program in their business. But we have, to your point, that has to be audited for each step to make sure that it's legally compliant and that you don't have any loopholes in it, because otherwise, you know, who knows, man? You know, your agency could be brought in on an errors and omissions case because you provided a document that was solely generated by a computer. They implemented it. As a result, they had of bad advice. They didn't do something. And now all of a sudden they flooded all 6 floors of a condo building, you know, and now you're on the hook because you're the one who told them how to do it.
Exactly.
So,
you
know, you do have to be careful. And I think that there's a certain subset of people out there that probably look at ChatGPT and anything, you know, Google Bard or any of them as the savior to give you half your day back. But at the end of it all, it could be putting your entire role in jeopardy if you're not careful, because you can't just solely rely on what it's pulling out. It doesn't know everything. Even though we want to believe that it does, it doesn't know everything, and it's not going to be accurate. I mean, I've seen a bunch of different examples similar to the one that that you gave, but, you know, like I want to say that there was a lawyer somewhere that used it, and it referenced a court case that didn't even exist.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, for example, I can ask you to quote the paper I wrote on a kidney transplant I did, and it'll create a completely bogus reference of a paper I never wrote. You know, it makes up stuff. I mean, actually, it's called GPT. And, you know, the G stands for generative, which literally makes up stuff from this vast amount of data it was trained on. The problem, you know, these are trillions of words that it's trained on, literally trillions. And the problem is the data it was trained on is good, bad, and ugly. You know, it's from Twitter, from Facebook, from, you know, whatever, wherever they could find data. And some of it is obviously really bad information. So when it generates an answer from this knowledge base, from this model that's created, then sometimes things are just real bloopers. And it doesn't have common sense, and it doesn't have a way to kind of evaluate its own output, you know, just blindly output something. And that's why you need a human in the loop. But it can be tremendous time saver, but you have to be careful. You know, for example, I use it as a programming aid. I can tell you it's not going to be replacing programmers anytime soon, but it does often save me a lot of time. But then on occasion, it will give me some suggestion, some piece of code or so that looks plausible, but it doesn't work. And then I end up spending more time than I would have otherwise, getting to the bottom of it and debugging it. So it's really a tool that one has to learn how to use effectively, and then it can be a tremendous time saver.
Correct. It's not Google. You can't just go in and type a query and hope for the best and get a bunch of results. To your point,
right?
You have to train it. You know, it's interesting because there's so much that's going on with both voice cloning and things you can do with photos and everything else. I don't know where this stuff's going to go, man. I mean, it's crazy to think of where we're at now, even relative to where we were 5 years ago. But I feel like what we're seeing is kind of the stuff we were watching when we were kids in science fiction movies, and we've actually lived long enough to see some of it happen.
Well, that's an interesting comment because, what we see in movies and the way we think of artificial intelligence is really the way the original founders of the field of AI, when they coined the term some almost 70 years ago, they were thinking about building a thinking, reasoning, a machine that can think, learn, and reason the way humans do, you know. And but that's not what the field of AI is. The current approach that we have with statistical generative approaches, they don't think. They don't know what they're talking about. So the field that ultimately is going to give us those truly human-like thinking machines is actually called artificial general intelligence, or AGI. And it really requires a different approach. It requires an approach where you start off by saying, what does intelligence require? Intelligence requires this ability to ingest and think about things as they are happening. And these large language models and generative AI can't do that. So, for example, you know, they are GP, the P stands for pre-trained. They are trained at the factory, and they cannot actually learn anything in real time. It's sort of a very superficial short-term learning, but it doesn't update their model, it doesn't change what they know. So it would be like hiring a human assistant, and they come to you and they say, oh, I can do QuickBooks, I can do Excel, and okay, great. And then you tell them, all right, we've opened a branch here in this city, and we've changed some of our product lines, and we have a new business relationship with this person. And then the next day, your assistant comes in and they've forgotten all of that, or they can't think through the implications of that. That's really what the current approach of AI is. So that's not going to get us to the kind of, you know, vision that we have, as you say, growing up in AI. That's going to require a different approach, the cognitive AI approach, where we have machines that can truly understand and think and reason.
I think that's the one that scares everybody, man.
It shouldn't.
Yeah, but I mean, if you watch, and I understand as soon as this comes out of my mouth exactly what I'm going to say, but I mean, if you watch the news, that's what they're warning everybody about. That's what they're telling you, is that this is out of control, that AI without having boundaries around it is going to basically take over and rule the world. What's the rebuttal to that?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, that the view we have of AI is informed by Hollywood to a large extent, you know, so that's kind of, AI is always the bad guy, and, you know, it's going to lead to tears and take over the world. But that is not really the way AI is built. I mean, what we are building, the AI we're building, and other people who are building AI, you build it specifically to serve our purpose, not that it has a mind of its own. And so what people confuse is, you know, the let's call it the reptile brain that humans have. You know, we are still quite primitive in the way we think and operate. I mean, we are largely still driven by reproduction and survival instincts. you know, and that's where egos get in the way and anger and, you know, hatred and things like that. An AI will not have this kind of reptile brain. There's no reason to build an AI that will have this primal drive to reproduce or to survive. That's just not the kind of AIs that are being built. So it will have no motivation to take over the world. I think it's just people projecting of the worst of humankind and what you see in Hollywood movies, but it's not actually realistic when you think of it from a engineering point of view of the kind of systems we build. Basically, we'll do things that we want them to do, not to take over the world. They have no motivation to do that.
So you have AI that's used in call centers. How far away are we from having AI appointment setters for sales call centers doing outbound as opposed to receiving inbound?
Well, we can do that now. So the trade-off there is really the cost of the call versus the cost of revenue that you have. For example, one of our early investors in our company has a large supplement company. And they, you know, the reason we didn't, even though they were investors in our company, the reason we didn't automate is because every call was actually a huge revenue generator. And, you know, if you have really well-trained operators in a call center and they can advise people in terms of, you know, they can give anecdotes and say, hey, my daughter has been taking this supplement and it really helped her, whatever, you know, condition. You know, people respond to that and they really are likely to spend more money with you. And you really don't want to do that with an AI that's going to fake being a human and tell you, you know, that the supplement really helped my daughter. You know, you just don't want to do that. So I think where there are transactional things where people, you know what they want and or there's, you know, like 1-800-Flowers, you know, we're using it for sales as well. People may want to know various options of what's available and so on, or, you know, something flowers that last a long time or dark chocolates, you know, or whatever specific things you want. So you can certainly use it for that right now. And, you know, as we develop the technology further and further, it'll become more and more sophisticated in being able to handle more difficult sales situations, as I should say. So it's really a matter of time to develop it further. They are just, as I say, there are certain types of calls where you really want this highly trained salesperson who can build a relationship with a customer, a personal relationship with a customer.
I think it's going to be an interesting day when that happens, especially with the way telemarketing is now, because at that point, I feel like anytime you can get any type of technology to streamline a revenue-bearing part of your operation, like appointment setting or even, you know, a general sales role, it would be crazy. Like, we certainly not artificial intelligence, but we have quote bind issue products that we offer right now. If you had somebody who was getting married in your family, for example, and they were going to have their reception at a garden club here in Tampa, that garden club's going to require they have general liability coverage to cover the event. They're going to have special event. Right. That's not something that's worth my time. Like, I don't, my average client pays me $250,000 or more a year for their insurance premiums on the commercial side. I'm not going to screw around and write special events policies for $50 in commission.
Right, right.
That being said, I also don't want to turn away the $50 in commission. So if we can run them to a landing page where they can self-guide and they can go through the process, they can buy the policy, pay for it, have it issued, have the certificates issued. Now I have an automation in place that allows me to continue to make that money, even though it's something I personally wouldn't focus my time on. And I think that there's going to be a lot of use cases for things along those lines too, where even if it's, it'll be just, I tell people all the time, I'm from a weird generation because the internet was just kind of starting to get built when I went to college. It still wasn't normal that you had email. Right. It still wasn't that you got internet access everywhere. So I have the benefit of watching what happened from, you know, the early 90s through the early 2000s as all of that stuff grew. Then you introduced social media and social networks, and that was a whole thing. And then now we're here with this with artificial intelligence. And I think the thing that makes the ChatGPTs and all of that so much different is it's readily available to the general public. Like, anybody can get on and use this thing. They can type whatever they want into it and get some sort of response for the most part out of it. And I think that's a little bit scary too, because to your point, that information's not guaranteed to be 100% on point.
Yes, correct. But, you know, people will learn, you know, of how a tool can be used and what they can rely on and what they can't rely on. But, you know, as you say, the automation will continue to grow, and the kind of things you're talking about, the sort of routine, low value types of things, absolutely make sense to automate. You want people to be able to do that very simply and you know, without hassle, without having to talk to a human. And of course, we have the dynamic that the younger generation in particular doesn't want to talk to a person. They just want, you know, want to text on their phone and get stuff done. They don't even want to do a voice call. They just want to, you know, do it on a web page or through text. But I think even older generations are switching, are getting to that, you know, no, I don't really want to talk to a person. I just want to get the stuff done. Now, when you're talking about, you know, doing outbound calls, I think a law was just passed, in fact, that bans outbound calls, robocalls that are AI generated. Though, you know, if you opt in, of course, that will be excluded if the existing client and you opt in to that. So that's just something, you know, to keep in mind. And
email as well.
Thank God that yeah. that's banned, because, yes.
Email, I mean, text, and phone, all three were affected.
Right.
Yeah, so it'll be, it's going to be interesting to see how well that's adhered to. I mean, we've had the canned spam laws for how long, and yet I still get so many non-compliant solicitation emails with no way that I never opted in for no way for me to opt out of that.
Correct.
I hope it's enforced. But all that to be said, as we get close to wrapping up here, here's the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. Aside from your own product and your own service, what's your favorite use case for AI that you've seen developed over the course of the last several years?
Well, I think ChatGPT kind of blows it away, really, in terms, you know, all of the use cases that we were talking about. And of course, not just ChatGPT, but, you know, all of the various products, and some of them that are coming out are actually maybe better in some regards than ChatGPT, but we have a lot of choices there. But that really is a revolution. It's just, you know, you need to know what it's good for and what it isn't good for. But I think that's definitely top of the list there.
What have we missed? Is there anything we've missed that you wanted to make sure we got covered?
No, I'd just like to say, anybody interested in the next revolution, or what DARPA calls it, the third wave of AI, which is cognitive AI, you know, feel free to contact me, and I've written about that and have a few videos about that, because that really is the next big thing that's going to overcome the limitations of generative AI. So to have cognitive AI that you truly can trust, that's auditable, and that knows what it's talking about. So that's going to be the next wave.
There you have it. If you want to know how to find him, it's aigo.ai. That's the website for aigo.ai. Go check it out. All my carrier friends that are out there listening, we have 40-some thousand people that listen to this podcast when it drops. I know there's plenty of y'all out there that are carrier people, and I know you're fed up with dealing with overseas call centers. This is a great way to bring the experience back to where you want it. I highly encourage you to, at least at a bare minimum, check out what Peter's doing on his website, read some of his stuff, watch the videos. And if it makes sense, go ahead and reach out, because I feel like we're just getting started going down this road. And I'd rather be an early adopter than wait until everybody else has it figured out and has beat me up at the point of sale with their tech stack. And when I could have been an early adopter. And I don't think this is going to go away. It's only going to continue to enhance and get better.
Yes, absolutely. And you can reach me on, you know, LinkedIn, Twitter, or from the website, peter@igo.ai. So, yep, hope to hear from you.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, listen, Peter, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us. And we look forward to hearing back from success stories of people who reached out and you've been able to help them solve a problem that they've been facing. So look forward to those stories, and everybody else. We'll catch you next week. See ya.
You've been listening to the Power Producers Podcast. You can follow Killing Commercial Insurance on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want to take your game to the next level, check out our book, The Extra 2 Minutes, and our website, killingcommercial.com.